It is about time for our featured presentation. It is called Mic Check, and the theme song in the background, the legendary Mr. Marvin Gaye asking the potent question of what's going on. There's something very important going on in these United States also. It is the 2024 presidential election, ladies and gentlemen. And the two candidates vying for the top job in the world to lead the free world. One, a former president. Yes, a former president. And one is the current vice president. Her name is Kamala Harris. She comes via, yes, she is the daughter of immigrants, Indian mother, and a Jamaican father. Her father, a professor. Her mother, a scientist. And yes, indeed, she was once a district attorney, an attorney general, a U.S. senator, and now she is the current vice president. This historic run, ladies and gentlemen, is historic indeed, because if elected, Kamala Harris will become the first woman president and the first black woman to sit in the chair at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. What would this mean, or what would this look like for places like Jamaica and the wider Caribbean region at large? Well, to talk to me about it this morning, and we want to look at it from even a financial aspect, to talk to me about that this morning, coming on the heels of our special guest last week, Professor Basil Wilson, Bagger Basil Wilson, formerly of John Jay College. It also comes on the heels of Mr. Bob Gore, the former presidential campaign manager for Jesse Jackson's run in 1984. This week we have retired economist Mr. Mark Ricketts joining us this morning. Good morning, Mr. Ricketts. How are you, sir?
Very good.
How is Jamaica this Saturday morning, Mark?
Well, Jamaica always has a mix of excitement and chaos. So nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. And when you say a mix of excitement, I know the last couple of weeks, one of the big excitement in Jamaica was that dancehall artist Adijah Palmer, aka Vibes Cartel, was released after serving some 13 years behind bars. And then you talk about chaos coming out of Jamaica this week, the IC, the Integrity Commission, coming out with a whole lot of things that they said they have uncovered about our Prime Minister, Dr. Andrew Michael Olness. So, excitement and chaos, huh?
Well, listen, you have easily put together what is taking place. So you don't even need me to tell you. You have really taken away my punchline. I thought being overseas, you would not be aware that Vibes was set free, and then after he was set free, the PNP immediately collared him to become part of their presentation in terms of their annual address. The people on the street, vibes, good. Vibes should be prime minister. That was the thing. And then following that now is the Integrity Commission with our prime minister. It's really a mix of excitement and passion and chaos.
Yes, a lot. Well, let's get to the topic at hand here, Mark. There is a Indian Jamaican woman, an Indian black woman running for president in these United States. She goes by the name of Kamala Harris. She is the current vice president. If elected come November, and this is a historic run, how do you see this, though, Mark? The run to the White House, and let us start here. This historic run by Kamala Harris to the White House, how historic is this to you?
How is this?
Historic. Historic.
I mean, I think, listen, first of all, I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, first, to be able to get a woman to run so shortly after Hillary Clinton attempted to break the glass ceiling, came close, but didn't. And so the feeling was generally that it's going to take some time before another woman emerges.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, just within, from 2016, so in less than 10 years, another person has emerged.
Mm-hmm.
But now this one comes with, striking difference in the sense that as you just mentioned. I mean, from an Indian mother and a Jamaican father, she's black, so she'd fall in the Obama tradition. And in addition, I mean, she comes out of a mother who is a scientist and mm-hmm. a father who is a professor. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she has, you know, clearly strong academic breeding, and she has, you know, an intellect mm-hmm. just emerging alone from her parents. So that combination of brilliance, of excellence, and a sensitivity to issues, mm-hmm. and then being woman mm-hmm. coming so shortly after Hillary Clinton, with the expectation now that she can really break the glass ceiling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's just a phenomenal story. Mm-hmm. It's just something that historians will tell, you know, whatever, irrespective of the outcome. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just, and then now, in terms of the energy she has brought, mm-hmm. I mean, this is what is phenomenal, because hers is not a campaign, you know. Mm-hmm. Hers is a movement.
Yes.
I mean, this is what you're getting. You're getting a movement. So, I mean, she's coming literally from Biden, who has been way down in the polls, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, within 2 months, mm-hmm. she has been able to translate this into an energy force that is simply phenomenal and simply outstanding.
Indeed.
So, I mean, whatever happens, I mean, one has to commend her mm-hmm. for really taking almost a broken political party and system,
right,
and really bring to bear a sense of passion and excitement, and you know, it's as I said, it's a movement where mm-hmm. you know, you're part of something that mm-hmm. is happening at a particular speed that is both enjoyable, fascinating, mm-hmm. and then, you know, because it is an uphill battle, mm-hmm. you know, you have your concern.
Indeed. It is happening at a rapid speed, you know, but talking about glass ceiling, just think about, and I mentioned this quite often, think about this when Shirley Chisholm was elected to Congress, and then Shirley Chisholm ran for president, and some say, wow, is she crazy? A black woman running for the presidency of the United States. And then we have a Jesse Jackson as a black man in 1984. And then folks started mm-hmm. saying, we will never ever see a black person as president in the White House. And then here came Barack Obama, a young senator out of Chicago, and he ran for president, and he became mm-hmm. president. He was re-elected. Huh? He was re-elected.
Yep.
So we talk yep. about the glass ceiling. So the glass ceiling is already broken for a black man to be in the White House. But then for a mm-hmm. woman to be in the White House, Hillary Rodham Clinton came very, very close. But this mm-hmm. time around, with Kamala Harris, and coming from the stock that she's coming from, and at mm-hmm. this current moment, as the race tightens, if there is a united force, and this is what the experts are now saying here, if there is a united force behind Kamala Harris, she will be elected president. But that force must unite. Now, with that said, if Kamala Harris should be elected president of the United States, what would this look like for a place like Jamaica? Again, having Jamaican roots in the White House, having some curry goat and some jerk chicken up in the White House. What would this look like for places like Jamaica and the wider Caribbean region, Mark?
Well, listen, so just think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Usain Bolt goes to China and mm-hmm. does 9.58,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and some of us don't know him. Some of us just have to be aware of this man's speed, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But for the entire nation, for the entire Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
for black people all over the country, mm-hmm. and for people even who just appreciate sports, to see somebody make such a massive and drastic change in the record of the 100 meters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a phenomenal excitement that people, that allow people to participate, allow people to be one with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, take this now to the presidency,
mm-hmm.
where it has never happened that a woman has been president. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, a person out of Jamaican Indian stock,
mm-hmm.
a black individual,
mm-hmm.
is now, let's assume, as you say, has been elected
yeah,
president.
Yeah.
Before we deal even with the finance,
mm-hmm.
the economics,
mm-hmm.
Can you think of every young person in Jamaica, in the Caribbean, being just elevated as a person to think that this is possible of somebody with, you know, Jamaican roots and origins could reach that far? I mean, it's just an uplifting experience.
Indeed.
It moves the country forward, you know, by degrees. Just from just participating and appreciating the significance of the linkage. It's outstanding. I mean, you can imagine, I mean, when Barack won or was running, if you see the crowds in Ligony Club, in the Halfway Tree Square, in any communities you drive through, and Barack is not a Jamaican.
Right.
And you see, you'd believe, I mean, that Barack was one of these fellows who went to high school here and who graduated. I mean, the passion, the joy, the entertainment, the tears. I mean, you saw people, tears coming down their eyes, just so overjoyed at his success.
Yeah.
Picture that now. Transfer that into Kamala, a woman, first woman, just like Barack was the first man, first black man. She now is the first woman. My gosh, let me tell you something. We're going to have buckets to full up. We're going to have to find buckets to full up the tears.
Wow.
Some people just from the sheer passion of it all.
Yeah.
That's the eye drops are just coming down and people just overwhelmed by what has occurred. So that's an upliftment for the society even before we deal with financial flows or, you know, any kind of relationship in the context of, you know, of money and business and et cetera.
Indeed, indeed.
It's just the sense that
it's
one of us.
Yes,
have
yes.
to have made it.
It's an amazing feeling, you know, Mark Ricketts, because, you know, just think about Jamaica itself, a country that gained political independence some 62 years ago. Think about Jamaica, the home of Marcus Mosiah Garvey, our first national hero, and a man who took the black movement all around the world at a time when there was hardly anything to actually advertise this. Yes, there was the newspaper. He had his own newspaper. But think about this. We had no Facebook. We had no Instagram. Television wasn't the way it wasn't the way it is back then. Radio wasn't the way it is today back then. Think about that movement. Who would have imagined that there would be one day, a woman of Jamaican descent sitting at the top job in the world, the leader of the free world, and the motivation that this would bring, as you said, not only to Jamaica but to the wider Caribbean region. I remember when Barack Obama visited Jamaica. You remember that massive movement, and when he made that stop up by the University of the West Indies, and he tried to talk like a Jamaican and say, "Wagwan, Jamaica." The place almost teared down. So can you imagine, Madam President Kamala Harris? Can you imagine that?
Well, listen, what you have said, you see, is so perfect. And I mean, you have analyzed and put it in context by using Marcus Garvey, which I think is just a genius on your part. So that's brilliant. We should also, every time we mention Marcus, we should also mention Claude McKay. Because when he thinks if we should fail, and Churchill used that to drive and succeed in World War II, he never identified where to come because they thought it was Churchillian. But this was a black Jamaican who went to New York and wrote a poem that became the influencer of so many things in the world, and particularly the war that allowed us to win that war. Otherwise, it would have been taken over by Hitler and fascism. So when you combine those two in terms of the energy and the essence and the passion they brought to the world at large, you can see how a Norman Manley or a Barack Obama or a Kamala Harris emerge out of this kind of experience and then really redound to the good. For all of us at this stage now to just participate and be part of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, that the Garvey movement, it's owed to the man from Westmoreland. A lot of people like to talk about the great parish of St. Anne's. Yes, St. Anne's has produced some great people. I'm not taking that away. But the man from Westmoreland, Claude McKay, yeah, indeed. You know, on his shoulders, Garvey sat for a while there on his shoulder.
Yes.
Now, so we cannot and we should not forget that.
You know it all, which is so perfect that you have that background and that history. That's fabulous.
Well, we have to know our story, you know, because we don't want anyone to tell our story, Mark Ricketts. We want to tell our own story. So we must know our journey. And once we know the journey, hence where we come from, we know where we want to go. So, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for that compliment, sir. So now, as we look at this historic run, we look at a gentleman who was rattled recently in a debate. Yeah, rattled by Kamala Harris. And some said that his nerve was shot. His nerves were shot to the point where he said some very crazy stuff. Won't even repeat some of them here because it's so crazy. No, you look at her poise, how she, she has grown from the time she ran for president in 2020 to today. It seems as if the 3.5 years, even though she was well-groomed as a district attorney, attorney general, a U.S. senator, it seems as if she being the vice president that placed her on the world stage, as she mentioned to her opponent on that Tuesday night, that she has traveled the world and she has met with many world leaders. It seems as if this last 3.5 years, we have seen a totally different person in Kamala Harris, huh?
I agree with you. I think, in fact, I wouldn't even say 2.5 years. I would say probably last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what happened at this, before that, she had to have been given duties
mm-hmm.
that were literally impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never forget when she went, I think, to Guatemala
mm-hmm.
to say that, you know, she wants to work through, you know, providing whatever financial support that she can to assist them so that they can prevent the number of individuals coming into the states.
Mm-hmm.
And when she, and they obviously said, listen, if you can pull this off, this would be great.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell us that, you know, they accept and understand no more individuals should be coming to the states.
Right.
You know, unless, you know, just as did those in high demand for what securing entry.
Mm-hmm.
entry.
Mm-hmm.
And when she said, I told them no more, I mean, this literally terrified the entire Democratic party, because in a sense, for her to publicly state it
mm-hmm.
is what basically they didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted her to accomplish it, but then they wanted to say to make her accomplishment be publicly known.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she was really given, you know, a basket to carry water.
Mm-hmm.
So in that early phase, she had issues and problems with her staff. She had, because they never defined for her the direction.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the last year now in foreign affairs, when they pulled her in
mm-hmm.
and started sending her to countries all over the world now to play that major role, you know, as a kind of ambassador for the U.S.
Yes, yes.
I think this is where she really, you know, moved into a period where success was inevitable
mm-hmm.
because she understood now how she had to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
She understood the privacy of the operation. She understood, and the others now, what she brought to the table
mm-hmm.
could understand what she shared, you know, as a U.S. vice president
mm-hmm.
to, you know, to a lot of these foreign leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she just, this was like when somebody's just given an opportunity to really emerge as an individual because they have been given the space to do so, and have been given, in essence, you know, just a sense of faith
yes.
that they can achieve, that they don't need to be overlooked, they don't need to be, because just if they're just given the door, open the door for them,
uh-huh.
they can, and I think this is what she just got the confidence.
Indeed.
But my gosh, I can do this.
Yeah.
And I think the last year now has been just a whole total turnaround for her.
Mm.
And you can see the evidence.
Indeed.
Because, I mean, whether she's on the debate stage, or she's on the platform,
mm-hmm.
or she's just merely talking to individuals, or like when she was talking to Oprah the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just see this strength of conviction.
Yes.
And you just feel a sense of understanding of the issues
yeah.
for which she now can say, just give me the baton and I can carry it. And I will, just give it to me. Trust me.
Indeed.
And I will run with it.
Indeed. You know, program note, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Grooving Radio. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, Sparking Global Changes. We continue our Kamala Harris series right here on Grooving Radio this Saturday morning. And my very, very special guest making his first appearance on Grooving Radio is retired market economist, Mr. Mark Ricketts, out of Jamaica. You know, Mark, it seems as if the movement was meant to be, because that June evening when President Joe Biden decided to make that decision to say that he wasn't going to run anymore, and he immediately endorsed his Vice President Kamala Harris to be the next leader and the candidate to take on the GOP candidate for president, it seems as if the movement immediately started, Mark Ricketts. The amount of people who signed up and the amount of people who donated, it did re-energize the whole Democratic Party. But it brought back memories of Barack Obama and the movement that he created.
Well, listen, I think you have said it perfectly. But what is amazing is, remember, you know, Barack, after he gave that brilliant speech at the Democratic Party years earlier, he started preparing himself to be president.
Yeah.
So he now undertook all the requirements. He understood all the reading he had to do. He understood all the people he had to reach out to. So he had years building his case. Think of Kamala. On a Sunday, Biden calls her and says, listen, I'm not running. And I remember, you know, he had put up, really is back that, no, I'm going to run because I beat Trump once and I can beat him again. He went to Pelosi, went to his office and said, let me tell you something. You're not running anymore, you know, done, finished, because you're going to pull down the whole party. And you have done so much as a president. Let that be your legacy. Don't force the issue, and then when you end up losing the presidency, the House, the Senate, I mean, it's a restart for Democrats. And she was able to get him. No, he picture this. He calls Kamala on a Sunday and let her know that, well, he's not running. And Kamala goes on the phone and phone over 100 people. To set in motion what you have just stated. That movement within almost, which was immediate.
Instead.
Just got people, it's like should phone you, should phone John Brown, should phone Mary Smith. I said, listen, I'm running, you know, I need your help. And this, and everybody goes, I said, what? I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And it's amazing that in so short a time, remember, you know, she has, it's not even 3 months, you know, that she has been able to take off. Because this is like a jet plane taking off now, good, with very little, you know, opportunity to fill up the tank or anything like that. And she just took off. And within a matter of days, she got white dudes, she got women, she got black women, she got people, no canvassing on her behalf, no pushing out. So she has really lit up a fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
In so short a time. Yeah. It's not that she had a background of 2 months. She never knew Biden's going to give up. In fact, she was supportive of Biden continuing. She was faithful to Biden, and she just kept that faith. And to, in all but sudden, within a 3 month period, and we're not talking about running for local government or to be dog catcher or to be, you know, run for state. You're talking to run for 300 and odd million people in the United States. And in 3 months, to light a fire. And to get that kind of sense of possibility. We don't say she's going to win, but to be able to feel like you can energize an entire nation to at least be sensitive to the message she's giving. I mean, I think we just have to be proud. We just have to be that sense of joy. Just that feeling of, yeah, man.
Yes.
It's a wonderful experience.
You know, I like her composure. I've been watching her closely since that Sunday night, and I've seen a major, major difference in Kamala Harris. You know, you mentioned Barack Obama and the DNC convention up in Massachusetts many, many years ago, when many Americans did not know who Barack Obama was, and he was the keynote speaker at the Democratic Convention in Massachusetts. No one knew that Barack Obama would have become the next president because, I mean, that speech he gave that night, not only Barack Obama became known to America, he became known to the world, and the world started paying notice. Well, I can tell you this. The debate 2 weeks ago, Tuesday night, that debate was watched by millions of people around the world, and they saw something in Kamala Harris that they never saw before. They saw someone who was in full control. She was in full control. She was in the driver's seat that night, and the walk she took across that stage when she went to extend her hand to her opponent, if you notice, go back and look at it. If you notice, he was frozen. He did not know how to greet her because he did not expect that kind of greetings from her. And I tell you this, it has been a uphill climb since then for Kamala Harris. Now, Mark Ricketts, let's look at this economically. A Jamaican.
Before we look at it economically, I'd just like to say one thing. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you pulled together the Barack's first presentation on stage to become a worldwide phenomenon and Kamala's debate to become a worldwide phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad you made that linkage because I think it's very important. It's not just when Barack won in 2008, but it's that first speech he gave at the Democratic Party. And then you tie that in now with Kamala. So I just want to commend you in terms of that linkage because I think that is so important. And your audience.
Thank you. Know,
and that the fact that you've informed the audience in this part, a lot of them will remember.
Yes.
But it's just to tie it in. So I just want to commend you.
Indeed. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Now, Mark, as we look at, let's look at this from the economic side now, because you know, boy, the roots is so deep down in St. Anne's. I think if elected, probably one of the first stop Kamala will make on a world trip, it probably will be Jamaica. You know, you just never know. St. Anne's, Jamaica. Can you imagine that, Mark? And what that would do to the economy? Just having a Kamala Harris making a stop in Jamaica. Let's start there economically.
All right, let's assume whether she makes a stop or not. Just think of the sense because of the linkage now between Jamaica and herself. It just in terms of the government, in terms of business people, in terms of individuals now seeing a new America, which Jamaica can now benefit because in terms of the individual at the top. So from that standpoint, I just feel that, you know, whether it be the market individuals or just big business, or I just think that this sense that, listen, there's a breakthrough now for us to really expand our operations in terms of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that standpoint, it's not so much whether she comes here first, mm-hmm. but by her being the first person mm-hmm. and the first woman mm-hmm. to be president and the first with a Jamaican Indian link,
mm-hmm.
I just think that this will just drive a lot of people to accept our possibilities, but not only at the level mm-hmm. of trade or whatever it is, it's at the level of a school child.
Mm-hmm.
That person who is going to school and normally would probably, you know, forget about excellence,
mm-hmm.
forget about, you know, making great achievement their priority. I think what it's going to do, just I think even with Obama that happened, that school children drove themselves to a greater sense of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if she can do it, and then, I mean, because she's even more real to us than even Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Obama was the first male, yes, but this is a woman, normally women making that stride, because there's very few women presidents.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to take that hurdle, I just think for a lot of women in Jamaica, and for men also,
mm-hmm.
I mean, this is going to drive them towards greater sense of achievement, of accomplishment, mm-hmm. you know, of performance. So from that standpoint, it elevates the society.
Mm-hmm.
And so just not for the current, but in terms of the future dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just phenomenal and fabulous that this would occur to be able to spur business, establish probably a closer relationship between our ambassador overseas and our government also, in terms of the linkage that I'm sure they'll have. And in addition now, it's what it does to the mind and soul and heart of all the Jamaicans, just being part of this new breakthrough. I can see now kids who used to get C plus going to get A minus, kids who used to get, you know, A going to get A plus plus. I mean, they're going to, this is going to drive a number of people towards, you know, high levels of success, and not only in Jamaica. I just see the Caribbean will you know, pull into this, because they see her as part of us.
Indeed.
Because of the Indian linkage also. I mean, they're just going to be just natural links to South Africa.
Yes.
You know, with a lot of Indians in South Africa. With the Indians in terms of just their, you know, how they are positioned worldwide. So Jamaica will benefit because that Jamaican-Indian linkage will be, and I mean, the Indians have been so, you know, are excelling so much in the high-tech field.
Yes, indeed.
If we can pull on that, I mean, I just think that it is a win-win situation all around.
Yeah. You're talking about the Indians being involved in the high-tech field. There's a particular school in India that American colleges actually sought out the top performers there to come to these Ivy League school here in these United States. Yes, they're so technologically savvy. And the UK is also doing it, you know. So, and again, you look at what this would do for women around the world, for young girls around the world, high school girls, college girls around the world. You look at how this would motivate them in a very positive way. And the mere fact that, Mark Ricketts, immigrants have gone through so much in these United States. And to have someone of an Indian, Jamaican background as the leader of the free world, wow.
I think you have used the perfect expression.
I'm telling you, and you know, the power of woman, because now, you know, and we have to give them their props. You know, it is said that when queens ruled, we had less war, because women had a way of negotiating their way through things. I guess it's I guess there's a major difference in the estrogen and the testosterone. Because for men, it seems as if as soon as we get into some kind of conflict, all we talk about is war. It is said that women have a way of reasoning out things. Now, I can remember a leader like a Margaret Thatcher in the UK. Or we can remember, as a matter of fact, we have a current leader down in Barbados, in the Honorable Mia Amor Motley, and to have a Kamala Harris here in these United States, it would be an amazing thing. I think so.
No, I tend to agree with you, and the fact that she is trying to redefine her economy as an opportunity economy, in terms of just the language and the phraseology, I think it's just so impressive. Because once you define something as the opportunity economy, then it means that what you're doing is opening up the possibilities for individuals not to be repressed, not to feel downtrodden, but to recognize, no, this is opportunity time. This is time now. Because remember, she says opportunity economy. So we are not just dependent on the government. No, we now have to find ways to be able to, you know, secure success. And part of that now is going to be in terms of preparation, in terms of understanding leadership, in terms of understanding finance and business, you know. So you're going to get now a greater sensitivity to these undertakings. And so from her now, so I was really impressed when she defined this issue as opportunity economy. I think that was a very impressive statement, a very functional statement, and a very dynamic statement, not just to the U.S. now, but to the world, to say, listen, we are coming with the possibility of expanding America's world so that the rest of the world can participate. Because this is opportunity time. This is the time now you must start really taking advantage of possibilities. So I think that was a good expression of hers. One problem I have with her, however, which I don't know if this is supposed to be part of the discussion. is, and I hope that she changes, is one of the things I hate has to be class warfare, which is the us versus them.
Yeah.
You know, the middle class versus the billionaire class, etc. I think when she does that, what she does is she devalues excellence.
Right.
You know, she devalues, you know, she devalues brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
Because when an individual, where is billionaire or what? If an individual is the fastest runner ever, and you're almost going to say, no, no, you know, this is we must really be focusing on those who are kind of slow or not run so fast.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's the excellence of these individuals that drive opportunities for so many others.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they're billionaires or not, you know, as long as they're paying their taxes, then who cares? Because if they're billionaires, they're going to be spending large amounts of money.
Indeed.
One, it doesn't matter whether you buy a big boat, a big house, or whatever it is, somebody gets that money. Most times, these billionaires are going to keep the money under the mattress. So they're going to put it in the banking system, which means that banks have more to lend. So instead of her now keep talking about, you know, Trump's billionaire class, or, you know, the question of, you know, the middle class versus the billionaire. No, she shouldn't be saying, listen, we just want success. We just want to make people, because we know when Jeff Bezos borrowed $300,000 from his stepfather and started a business in 1990-something, and in less than 20 years, he's able to become the second or third richest man in the world. That means he's hiring thousands of people within that period of time.
Indeed.
They're all paying taxes. He's spending big money on all kind of, what I call it, pushes or not, on housing and this and boats and that. But it doesn't matter. It's people making those boats.
Mm-hmm.
So it's people earning money. It's people building those homes.
Indeed.
It's somebody who we bought a lot of land from. It happened to be getting that money, who will now spend it and probably start a business.
Indeed.
So I'm hoping that somebody tells her to stop the class warfare in terms of, because that is Marxian, that is Mao, that is Lenin, in terms of the presumption of trying to create obvious equality. It won't happen. And therefore, I would love her to just keep on that track of opportunity economy, just keep on that track of how she has projected herself in terms of overcoming even handicaps. Because for her to walk on that stage, walk up to a former president, shake his hand, and throws him off. And then by the time he's thrown off, for her now to give him all the things and say, listen, but you know this, do you know that you know, most of your military men have said this about you, etc. I mean, for her now to take that stance, I mean, we just take it for granted that it's easy.
Indeed.
But it's something that she had to go beyond the normal.
Yes, yes.
So this is what makes her, to me, a phenomenal individual.
Yeah, yes, indeed. She is indeed a phenomenal individual. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grooving Radio. We are in our featured segment, Mic Check, Sparking Global Changes. The Kamala Harris series continue right here on Grooving Radio with our very special guest, retired market economist, Mr. Mark Ricketts. You know, Mark, I'm happy you brought that up, you know, because no one is perfect. And certainly Kamala Harris isn't perfect. And I'm happy you brought that up, because if elected, she's going to need the two houses. She's going to need the Senate, and she's going to need the Congress. Speak on that for a moment, please.
Listen, that I'm so glad that this is, you have centered and focused on this. If Kamala loses the Senate, it's going to be impossible for her to govern. Why? The Senate appoints the judges.
Yes, indeed.
Trump is going to make sure that, and because now the Supreme Court is so dominant on behalf of Trump, what is going to happen is that he's going to appoint a series of canons, like the judge that is in his rules in his favor all the time. He's going to appoint a number of them. That's going to make it impossible for Kamala to govern. Picture this now. At the House, I hear the Democrats keep saying how 2022 turned out to be much better than they thought, because they didn't lose as badly, or they almost won better than most people thought. The Republicans thought they were going to win by a significant margin, and so they kept pushing the idea that they're going to win by a large margin. No, they never won by that large margin. But what they did win was the House. You can't, when you lose the House,
mm-hmm.
you lose all opportunity to set up legislation, to start, etc.
Indeed.
So the Democrats in losing the House in 2022 really push them back.
Yes.
And, you know, years. So if Kamala gets in, even if she wins the presidency
mm-hmm.
and loses the House and the Senate, she will, when Barack lost the House and then lost the Senate,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was almost impossible for him to govern. I mean,
yes.
I remember when he stood up there, when he got the results, and he stood up like a man broken,
right.
and he said, I got a shellacking.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that word, that his words,
mm-hmm.
because he understood what was going forward
mm-hmm.
in terms of legislation.
Right.
What will happen is that Trump now, whether he's in prison or not in prison, doesn't matter if she wins the presidency,
mm-hmm.
how does he's going to ensure that he continues to run everything
mm-hmm.
in both Senate and House. So she cannot afford to lose. So she has to find a way to make sure that not only she's going to win, but she has to win the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Indeed, indeed.
Must.
Yes, and
because remember, just picture you,
right.
because if Trump has a Michael Johnson there
mm-hmm.
that is controlling everything in the House,
mm-hmm.
and then he has all these individuals in the Senate who are so deadly afraid of him.
Mm-hmm.
All he's going to do is tell them, no, don't pass this legislation. Don't pass this one. Pass that one. Don't pass this one. And they're just going to follow PP clock.
Yes, indeed.
She can't influence if she don't have if she doesn't have ownership or control, well, not ownership, but control of the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at what Jim Jordan has been able to do in the House right now. That Hakeem Jeffries can't do a thing about. I mean, they have all these, you know, constant interrogations of people, etc., and they're just making a mess of things.
Indeed.
No, they're talking about closing down the thing at the end of the month in terms of the closing down the entire financial operation because they're not going to fund the budget. So all these things are frightening things.
Mm-hmm.
So Kamala can't come into office and have these kind of limitations, disadvantages.
Yeah.
So when you brought up that about the Senate, I think it was perfect for you to have brought up this up because this is important for her to say, listen, I have to do what is necessary to make sure I win.
Indeed.
Not just the presidency, but both the Senate and the House.
Yes,
and
indeed.
It's hard for you know, because remember, the Democrats have to have 23 Senate seats up that they are competing.
For re-election, yes.
The Republicans only have 11.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. So she has, and remember the seat of advantage right now is Democrats by two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the Democrats are going to have to hold literally all 23 seats.
Yes.
Or alternatively, they lose two, they're going to have to win two or three from the Republicans.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
So is that that ratio of so many Democrats up for election as against a smaller number for Republicans?
That's the
challenge she has. So, I mean, she has to be, and with a short time span, you see, if let's assume she had 6 months,
mm-hmm.
it's different. But to be able to pull everything together just within the next, you know, less than 2 months,
yeah.
literally.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And to start now just a few months ago, I mean, it's when you call an uphill battle, when you call the possibility of trying to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Using Martin Luther King's phrase of we shall overcome.
Indeed.
I mean, it is, if she pulls it off, I mean, it's both a miracle, a feat, and an accomplishment of no mean order.
Indeed.
So
we're just about five weeks, a little bit over 5 weeks away from the November 5th presidential election. And as we say here at Groovin' Radio, all elections have consequences. And talking about an election with consequences, this one is the most consequential election in our lifetime so far. Because I remember in 2016, we were saying how important that election was. In 2020, we were saying the same thing in 2020. And here in 2024, we're saying the same thing and even saying it at a higher volume. Because right now, from where we sit, as a people, and not only African American, not only black people, but as a people, as the human race, from where we sit right now in these United States, who would imagine that we would have someone who was already in the White House and wants to get back into the White House making a statement such as, I would like to be a dictator even for a day. Can you imagine a dictator in the United States of America White House even for a day? How that would look and how dangerous that could be. So then we talk about purpose. We talk about unity. We talk about love. Yeah? And we have to bring this all together even before November 4th, because we must continue the movement of Kamala Harris's run to the White House and make it a reality. Because this becomes a reality, and as I just stated before, she needs the Senate and she needs the House. She needs the Congress to be able to govern properly. And if all of that can fall in place, if all that can fall in place, we will see, yeah, a major difference in how our presidency will unfold. With the few minutes we have left, Mr. Ricketts, I want to thank you first very much for joining the conversation, for joining the series, because I have to use this platform to educate, and I have to use it in such a way so people can understand, not understand, so people can understand where we are, hence how far we have come from, the journey that we have traveled, and for those who have given it all, the ultimate, some people gave their life for us to be able to have a franchise to vote. I want you to speak on the importance of voting in any election at all. Go ahead, Mark.
All right. Well, the real challenge here, which probably has never existed in the country's history, comes to be this. The challenger to Kamala is an individual who cannot afford to lose this election. He cannot afford to lose it. So he's starting from a position that whatever it takes for him to win, he must win. Because when you have the possibility of jail time mm-hmm. hanging over your head, mm-hmm. and you have reached a level that he has reached in society, mm-hmm. it's just a situation that he has to pull his team together. And I think he has been doing it. And remember, you know, he has been running from 2020 until now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has been campaigning. He has been organizing, he has been orchestrating mm-hmm. from then until now. So you can know that he has put in place a whole lot of things which we have not even seen as yet mm-hmm. to ensure victory on his part. Mm-hmm. Some of it is going to be, and if you look at a number of things, you can look at the situation where individuals have assume that they're going to win, mm-hmm. and the last minute something is done mm-hmm. to undermine it. Mm-hmm. This happened with Dukakis mm-hmm. and the Willie Horton situation. Uh-huh. So, you know, we have enough history. This happened with John Kerry mm-hmm. When they indicated that in Vietnam he never wasn't really, he was more gallivanting than playing
fighting.
The role.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mm-hmm. Than playing the serious role that he had, you know, as a commander.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are going to be things that are going to happen that we don't see yet. So I'm just saying, she's starting from a position that the person that is running against her cannot afford to lose.
Indeed.
No, they don't work on the same basis or with the same principles. They're not going by the same way. But even if they were, mm-hmm. when you cannot afford to lose, when mm-hmm. you cannot afford to lose, then you will adopt particular strategies that are cruel, that are terrible, that are awful, mm-hmm. because that is your only option. You can't afford to lose.
Right.
So it sets a table for us to almost be worried mm-hmm. if those are the differences between Kamala trying to win to save this nation and somebody who is trying to win to save himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's that dynamics that really make it, you know, not parallel or not even. So Kamala now really has to pull out all the stops. So you ask about the question of election and voting.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we're going to have to just get every friend, everybody. We have to phone. We have to get them. We have to take our car, try to get people to the polling stations, because you know they're going to put through every single impediment, block, roadblock
oh, yeah.
to prevent people from voting. Yeah. And even when they vote, they're going to find ways. Remember, a number of states are governed by individuals who are influenced or are afraid of
Donald, yes.
Because, yes, that's it. Everybody's afraid of Donald. So in this respect, people who don't even want to do the things that he's requesting end up doing it because it's just easier than having people threatening them and threatening their house and threatening their family. So it's that reality that we're faced with, which we have never had that kind of division to the extent that this exists. And then on top of that now, with the society just, you know, sauntering into autocracy, into authoritarianism, it's just going to be almost an impossible thing for us to accept because we don't, I think, because America has never gone that route. France has done it, Italy has done it, Spain has done it, but America has never, in all its history, never gone this route. So people don't understand when you talk about an authoritarian, what it means. So they just assume, well, oh no, he'll be better as a leader, he'll be better in the economy, but they don't understand. And when he says, and he tells you what he's going to do.
Indeed.
He's not hiding it. He tells you what he's going to do. So in this respect, people just have to vote. Even if they're tired, even if they can't get off the time from work, they have to plead with their employer so they can get off, so they can vote. They just have to understand this is a rare moment, not just to elect Kamala.
Yes.
But because she represents ongoing democracy as against authoritarianism. And if people want to avoid what it means to be, to function in a state and in a country and in a nation under authoritarianism, then they have to take whatever steps to ensure that they can vote.
Indeed.
They have to make sure they go to the polling station, they know they're a citizen, they make sure that they know that, you know, they have the right to vote, and that they have to just make sure. And if they have to stand in line for 5 hours,
indeed,
this one is worth it.
Definitely.
If they have to stand in line because they have come up with some new things and they have to show all their documents, then bring your documents to show it. Whatever is going to be the uphill battle, they just have to overcome. This is so important.
Yes, indeed.
Electing Kamala is what is significant. But on top of that, electing Kamala to preserve democracy.
Yes. Yes.
That is really what is important.
Indeed. I thank you so much, Mr. Mark Ricketts, for joining us this Saturday morning. I thank you so much for joining the Kamala Harris series here on Grooving Radio. It was, I hope it was worth your time, and it's certainly worth my time. And from some of the texts that I'm getting, it's definitely connected once again to the listening audience here at Grooving Radio. Election have consequences, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't matter if it's a local government election. It doesn't matter if it's a midterm election. All elections have consequences, and all elections are connected to national politics. And I do hope they all have national implication. I do hope that the folks in Jamaica who listens to this program from time to time, you also know you're in an election mode also. Election can be called at any moment in Jamaica. Could be tomorrow, could be next, early next year. So, but guess what? Your election also have consequences. So if you have that franchise to vote, exercise that franchise to vote, use it wisely, and think about those like Claude McKay, think about Paul Bogle, think about Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and I'm speaking to my Jamaican listeners now. You speak, think about those national heroes who laid it on the line, Nani and all of them, Sam Sharp, who laid it on the line so you could be here today with a franchise to vote in an election. So pay attention to what's going on in your country the same way I'm paying attention to what's going on in these United States. Any closing statements, sir, before you go?
Well, the one thing I'd just like to say is that I think how you have, you did the interview, you have made it much easier for me to seem half intelligent. Because you have set the frame and you have set the stage good in terms of just how you ask the questions and in terms of how you just identified some of the issues. So thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
And thanks for the interview. Thanks for allowing the interview.
Yes, sir.
And have a wonderful day and keep alive excellence.
Indeed.
And just keep building on the radio program.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Mark. You know, you're my friend, you know. I personally haven't met you, but you're my friend. This exchange this morning proved to me that even though the brothers has never met in person, we're brothers. We're brothers, and there's a reason why we were connected. So I thank you so much for being a part of this conversation, Mark.
Have a wonderful day and all the best.
Thank you very much, Mark. We'll talk soon. One love. One love.
All right. Good. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our featured segment, Mic Check, Sparking Global Changes in and Around the World. My special guest this morning was retired economist, Mr. Mark Ricketts.